Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country. The kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Welcome to Season 2, Episode 62 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of ComicBook.com. I'm your host, Kofi Outlaw, and with me today, I got Matthew Aguilar.
What's up, everybody?
And I got everybody's favorite dynamic duo back together, not really because you demanded it, but because it just the situation called for it. Brandon Davis, Charlie Ridgely are back with us.
Hello.
And yeah, we had to bring these two on because these guys are kind of going out, and my three co-hosts are some of the privileged few to have insight on some of the big, new, exciting content we're finally getting after a long summer with COVID-19. Mr. Brandon Davis has seen Tenet. Mr. Charlie Ridgely, Mr. Matt Aguilar, and Mr. Brandon Davis, I believe, have all seen The Boys Season 2, or at least they've seen what we will all see next week when the first three episodes hit Amazon. And
Have you not watched The Boys yet?
No, I'm savoring it. There were enough people on staff that watched it. I quietly just sat on the sidelines. Because I like to savor it. It's like a show I like to watch.
Understandable. Yeah. Understand that. Yeah.
So I pick.
Like, you don't want to binge it all at once, Kofi. You want to wait and watch it on a different on a release schedule. You don't want to just watch it all at one time.
This just got very interesting.
I love how he already started crap 5 minutes.
Yeah, I know.
We haven't even gotten to the intro yet.
We're like 5 seconds in.
This is why you don't come on the show.
Yeah, I believe in the old American credo of walking and chewing gum. So there might be sometimes I want to binge two episodes, and sometimes I might want to just wait and do the weekly talk with everybody. I don't have a set thing. I'm not a robot. I'm still a human. Still a human. Thankfully, Amazon's offering me options. So these guys have seen The Boys. So we're going to talk about all that. So we can tell you spoiler-free reviews about Tenet and The Boys, kind of give your impressions. And it's more valuable than ever, especially in the case of Tenet with a lot of people and what's going on still with the pandemic. There are a lot of people who are kind of on the fence about getting back to theaters. So Mr. Brandon Davis is going to be able to kind of break down in loose terms what this movie experience is like and, how he felt kind of being back in the theater and doing that whole thing. So we're going to see Chief, and we'll be seeing Charlie again soon because this weekend New Mutants comes out and in theaters.
Oh, God.
So he gets to take his big asterisk victory lap and tell us.
Nothing like that. Obligatory release for the win.
Yeah. So next week he'll be back for that. So you guys have a lot to look forward to. But beyond our deep dives into The Boys and Tenet, we also have some good stuff to talk about on the news front. We're going to do a little cleanup about DC fandom and kind of talk about how that event was received. We're going to talk about Netflix's Resident Evil series and what first details we just learned about that. Mr. Brandon Davis, it's good you're here. I was kind of sorry you weren't going to be here at first for this first part because we're going to talk about Fortnite going full Marvel and why your life just got much more exciting. And we're on the comics front. We got to talk about new comics, especially DC's Three Jokers debut. And yeah, I feel like if you can't see everybody's faces, there's going to be a lively discussion about that. So we're going to talk about Three Jokers. All right, let's get started at the top. DC fandom. So DC fandom, we told you we did the preview. We did the recap of all the big stuff we saw. And, our general impression was that DC did a good job with the caveat that they did a kind of three-card Monty trick with maybe not having all the most spectacular content in the world, but the way they presented it, the way they created the event, and the way they presented it made it really exciting for, like, a couple trailers, one of which is a movie we've seen technically before and some concept art. But they did a great job, and I wasn't the only one who thought so, and because 22 million people apparently kind of streamed DC fandom during its 24-hour run. So, I mean, this is a hit, and I think it's safe to say for me that this was like the best of these virtual convention attempts that I've seen since, you know, COVID hit and everybody tried to do their kind of different version of things. It was much more successful to me than Comic-Con at home. And I think it was smart that they did some things like streamlining it and cutting the kids stuff, putting that on a later date, like right late in the game, and kind of focusing in on the big stuff like, you know, the movies, the games that they had, and quietly skirting around some other things like TV. Like we said, they didn't do like the whole HBO Max DC rollout and what that's all about. We kind of quietly sidestepped that, but that's okay because we all had fun and we saw some Batman stuff. So that's a pretty good sign. And I mean, if we've been wondering, you know, we did a whole thing about if Marvel was ready for its own convention, and I think this just answered the question. I mean,
yeah,
DC just nailed a convention of all DC stuff, like virtually during a pandemic. So like, if we ever get back to anything, any kind of semblance of holding these things either semi-normal, yeah, Marvel's pretty much ready. That kind of answers that question, right? Like, Marvel's ready to smash it out of the park and do more than just a phase four presentation. They can do a whole Marvel kind of presentation if they want. So anybody got any feelings about the numbers?
I think it's like proof that this was a huge hit. And I mean, it, like, I think like, you covered everything. It was tremendously successful. It was nice how like we had like the huge bits during the big panels and then you had space like an hour in between, so that both the fans could digest it and us reporters could get all the content on the site. And then it was like back to it. The Aquaman panel was the only awkwardly disappointing panel. And that's only because you're comparing it to other panels that were had such big reveals and things like that, that they generated a lot of excitement. Whereas Aquaman was more of just a recap when everybody's mind was trained to expect news. But I mean, I think Marvel could, the thing is, I don't know that Marvel could do this right now. And you all know I'm a huge Marvel fan. It's no secret, but I don't know that they could do this right now. Like, all they can do is really, like, Black Widow's trailer would have the same impact as Wonder Woman, both because we know so much about both of those movies already. They were both supposed to be out, so the promotional trains left the station a long time ago. I mean, we could get Eternals and Shang-Chi footage. And, I mean, they have plenty, but they already released their schedule and everything and the titles. So I feel like barring casting or characters, like there's not all that much left for Marvel to reveal right now. So
it's all about the TV at that, like, for reveal standpoint. Like, that's what they've got to.
Yeah,
reveal.
And that's, and that's where it all lies. They're very strategic, and I think the reason they've been so quiet is because there's so much uncertainty. And like, you know, they don't want to go promote anything anymore if they don't know when it's coming for sure. Why put out another trailer with a release date that might end up being wrong? So I think that's why they've been so quiet. But I think there's something up their sleeve. Like, we saw Grace Randolph, you know, have your opinion of her as you will. She's been right, she's been wrong before, but she said the Mandalorian trailer was supposed to come last week. And if that rumor was true, then I think it was Disney saying, hold on, let's see how DC fandom goes. And we don't want to have anything get buried by everything Warner Brothers is about to release. So I think it's about to start happening, but I don't know if we'll get a Marvel event like that. I prefer in-person Comic-Cons, but for what we're doing now, like for the circumstances the world is in, I loved DC fandom. I thought it was by far, not even close, far and beyond the best event available this year.
Comic-Con at home was not even...
Yeah, we shouldn't even speak of Comic-Con.
Yeah, that was not even at...
I mean, you know, on one hand, like they have an advantage for being all in one company, you know, like, hey, yeah, we're doing this thing, we own you, do this. But it, like, they still, even for having those abilities, they pulled it off really well. I mean, there were technical hiccups here and there. There were some issues, but like,
how do you let your biggest trailers?
It was a great
leave
event from day.
How do you
it
let was, your biggest trailers and, yeah, of the day?
I don't know that
the person
this,
flipping those switches wasn't familiar.
Yeah, I don't know that this in this era, that's going to happen now 9 times. Like, it happens with games too. Like, games, all the details leak before the announcements. It's every week. Oh, hey, this announcement's happening on Friday, and it gets leaked on Tuesday. It happens everywhere, Brandon. Like, it's
and
just,
yeah,
the thing of the
in
industry.
Terms of movies, it happens with Warner Brothers more than anyone else. And I think it was like this thing came together so fast that the tech team behind DC fandom might not have been able to get to like the extra security behind hackers.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, it seemed like most of these leaks were just to people who were just better kind of web programmers or hackers who knew areas of that site that people didn't have time to kind of safeguard or put the crazy security.
It's still
into.
Wild that trailers for the Batman got out early.
But they had to be. They had to be loaded into that site somewhere. Yeah. And just it was a matter of who could figure out where. And they followed Riddler's clues and they found that thing.
So, Yeah.
But I don't think that took away from
I almost said like at this point, like I need my grainy DC things, and I'm so glad somebody made like a Comic-Con version of the Batman trailer, because that was very satisfying to me. Because I remember watching that first Suicide Squad, you know, teaser, like with the shaky, grainy stuff. I love that stuff. So
I almost feel like with the Batman, with these two specifically, with the Batman, because Suicide Squad did not leak, right? That one did not leak.
No, Suicide Squad did not.
So Batman and Snyder Cut, I feel like, if anything, it helped them. Because people
on that site to like be like, whoa, okay.
So they had all day to process it and talk amongst their friends and like, well, I don't feel about this. And then by the time it finally got revealed, if you were in, you were in. It wasn't those muted reactions. You were either one extreme or the other. There wasn't any more of the middle ground when the trailer finally was like pushed.
And I know it helped us as a staff. We had
it's a good thing. It's a good thing that the Wonder Woman trailer didn't leak early, so people didn't have that much time to look at Cheetah before the actual.
I agree. I feel like it would have done that one a disservice. But I think in those other two,
I can say safely that those leaks helped me get at least 5 people into DC fandom that weren't previously watching. Because they were like, oh, this is a legit thing. Like, there's something to this. Like, I want to see what else happens. And so they hopped on.
I'm not saying they should go out of their way to do that every time. No. I'm just saying in this case, I think it worked out. Okay.
If the trailer's really, really good, I think it helps out, especially like their quality's not quite there, so you want to tune in and see the real thing.
That's what kind of happened.
You know, but it catches your eye, it catches your attention.
I agree, it helped us as a staff, but I wish I didn't see the Batman trailer leaked, because when I watched it all grainy, I was like, that didn't look good. And then I watched it in HD and I was like, wow, that looks amazing. So I don't know.
It helped me.
That Vimeo link that Matt Reeves put out that was like full 4K.
That's crazy good. I actually like the grainy one because it looked like all creepy. He looked like all creepy coming out of that shadow in that first shot. It didn't look like he had eyes. And then like you see it clear and you're like, oh no, he has eyes. So anyway, then we're getting off topic. We did the Batman trailer already. But I mean, DC fandom nailed it, and DC's still killing it in marketing this year. Who would have thought? I mean, crisis marketing is their thing.
Crazy, right?
Well, Walter Hamada has done an excellent job in his
Yeah. Oh no, Walter Hamada is a secret weapon, and the guy they got from Hulu to start doing they took Hulu's old one of the guys who created that and made that into what it is to kind of run their digital stuff, and he's quietly doing some good stuff. So yeah, they got people who know what they're doing now, so that's good for you. All right, let's move on from that to some horror. Resident Evil, the popular gaming series, is now coming to Netflix as a not the films anymore. So we're getting a Netflix series. It's a live action series. Yep, 2 seasons. And we got some first details. BD, you sound like you want to take this away.
No. I was just joking that we're getting it back.
We're not really getting 2 seasons? Just
no, we're not.
Thing?
Okay. Okay. Do you need me to run with it?
Yeah. Go, you go for it.
So the season of the Netflix Resident Evil show. The showrunner is going to be Andrew, I believe I'm saying this right, Dobb? Am I saying that correctly? From Andrew Supernatural?
Dobb. Yeah.
And then Bronwyn, did I get that one right? Bronwyn Hughes, The Walking Dead, will direct and produce the first 2 episodes.
Wait,
there's
who?
Going to be 8 total.
Bronwyn Hughes.
From The Walking Dead?
Yeah.
That's what our wonderful article says.
He was the writer or one of the librarians who was on there.
The most interesting thing about this is the premise, because it's actually split into 2 timelines. It's just called, as of right now, Resident Evil. Doesn't have like a tagline or anything. But one is going to take place in the past. I'll read you the little synopsis here. So in the first timeline, 14-year-old sisters Jade and Billy Wesker are moved to New Raccoon City, a manufactured corporate town forced on them right as adolescence is in full swing. But the more time they spend there, the more they come to realize that the town is more than it seems, and their father may be concealing dark secrets. Their father, of course, is Albert Wesker, noted villain of the series. Secrets that could destroy the world. Then the second timeline takes place way in the future, supposedly when he screws everything up. It says there are less than 15 million people left on Earth, more than 6 billion monsters, people and animals infected with the T-virus. Jade, now 30, struggles to survive in this new world while the secrets from her past about her sister, her father, and herself continue to haunt her.
Too many numbers. I'm out.
That is super interesting to me as far as someone who did not like the movies, because
seems like somebody at Resident Evil sat down and was playing The Last of Us and were like,
we don't know. Like, there's so many things about Wesker as a villain that have still yet, even that we've had, like, it feels like 20 games in the series, he's not really been explored a ton. This is kind of interesting, taking it from this angle. I mean, I do hope we get some of the stalwarts like Jill and Chris and Leon and Claire, but I kind of like that it's this different of a take.
Kofi knows my trigger words.
Real quick, before we continue, I do want to say that Bronwyn Hughes is a director. He's a longtime TV director. He's worked for the last couple decades. He's done episodes for shows like The Resident, 13 Reasons Why, Better Call Saul, Hawaii 5-0, Teen Wolf. He did an episode of Walking Dead Season 10, which was
I would
Stalker.
Like to add, before Charlie goes any further, Bronwyn Hughes is a woman, and she wrote a very good episode of Walking Dead.
I did not know that.
But yeah, I went off. I don't know what that is, but yes, I went into
the IMDb page and I found her profile, and she wrote the Stalker episode of Walking Dead, which is a big Alexandria versus Whisperers episode from the most recent season. The second episode.
She directed that episode.
Was it a good episode?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was the best they could have done with that episode, because the first couple episodes of the second half were kind of
really, you know,
how The Walking Dead loves to do a little bit of filler here and there. So it was a little bit of that, but it was really a really well done. I think it was directed by Mikey Satrazinas, if I'm not wrong.
No, she directed
it. Oh, she directed it. Wow, okay.
Yes.
Yeah, it was good. It was very like artsy in its action and stuff, if I remember correctly.
She directed it. Jim
it was
Bond's
a huge fiery battle outside of the hilltop. And some.
Oh, that bodes well. There's lots of fire and lots of battles in Resident Evil.
Yeah, and like a lot of zombies. So if anybody can do it, it sounds
like.
Yeah,
I mean, that was a good battle scene.
I'm not as familiar with Resident Evil as Matt is. Those games terrified me as a kid, but I've always kind of appreciated the lore and like liked the stories. So I'm very excited. If Matt is excited, I'm in.
I mean, but yeah, let's just be clear. This is The Last of Us in Resident Evil world.
To a point, but then there are some elements of Last of Us, because I mean, Resident Evil was around first.
Oh, I know. I'm not doubting, but what I can already see they're going for is like that kind of time jumps in how
it's switch perspective.
Yeah, but things that happen in the present, and then we find out like the context in the past that's gonna like really that, mess with you, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, get that sweet cheap Netflix color grading.
Especially of two. Yeah, you're right. Like that very much does read that way.
I'm saying that because I'm knee deep in two right now. That's all I've been doing all day. So I'm very Last of Us two on the brain right now.
But I think all right. Episodes
Netflix
is good.
Wants some big IP so bad, and I respect.
Oh yeah. I mean, we literally did a piece about how they're trying to create their own Star Wars. Like, yeah, it's a whole operation.
Netflix, they lucked out with Stranger Things.
I'm just glad it's not the movies. Yeah. I'm glad we're going in a different direction, because I don't like the movies.
So right. Everybody's so happy today. Let's move on. So from Resident Evil, we'll keep an eye on that series and tell you what's going on there. Let's talk about Fortnite, something I didn't think we'd be talking about again. but here we are. I mean, Fortnite's just become like a licensing machine now, and pretty
much they're like the Funko Pop of video games.
Yeah,
it's like a legitimate advertising like area.
And slash perennial Travis Scott venue.
There was a Tenet trailer that debuted in Fortnite.
Yeah, I know.
I am Harry Potter holding a rifle in Fortnite, gunning down Aquaman.
Like pretty soon, tomorrow.
I got killed by Aquaman in Fortnite today.
Oh, no, I know. Aquaman is already there. I'm saying.
I know. I'm just saying that happened to me today. That's all. Yeah.
They got all the Avengers and more.
So, yeah, that's what we're talking about. So Marvel has come to Fortnite. This is like a collision of everything on BD's social media pages. like in one place. They did it for you, BD. So Marvel has come to Fortnite. We got a bunch of skins with Marvel heroes. We got like Wolverine, Black Widow, Storm. So cool. Thor,
Black Widow's not there yet, is she?
Is she not there yet?
There.
Oh, I don't know. You guys take it.
More importantly, Banana Man or whatever the hell his name is.
Healy, thank you.
He's getting claws. Dr. I was so excited. I know jack about like the mascots that have become become a thing on Fortnite anymore.
Healy is officially now part of Marvel Universe canon.
Oh, Jesus,
because this Fortnite game is in canon.
I do love
in the Marvel.
His name is Healy.
Universe. Yeah,
oh, that's amazing. Okay.
In Thor number 4 with Donny Cates that it came out a couple months ago, there's a bit where him and Galactus are going from world to world, and apparently in that montage they go to the Fortnite Island, because there's a comic that came out today called Nexus Battle Nexus War. And the comic is free digitally on Marvel Unlimited. It is also on the battle page, the battle pass screen on Fortnite. Yeah. So there's a comic lying on the ground. You can pick it up and read it.
So Peter
and
is
it's a story
Super
of
Surfer.
No, he's in canon now. It all counts.
Because wow.
It's all a comic in Marvel. Donny Cates wrote the Fortnite comic. It all counts.
This is a surreal.
I just want to know if Galactus is going to devour the map and we're getting a third map in Fortnite.
I don't know,
but there's already some, like, there's a whole place where there's a bunch of dead sentinels laying around that you can go explore. And there's a Dr. Doom's, like, Dr. Doom's a boss, and he has this whole, like, little rundown mansion and stuff.
Dr. Doom's always been a boss, Charlie.
Well, I mean, he's a boss in Fortnite. You have to fight and get abilities and stuff.
So, okay, so who here is still playing Fortnite? Question.
I always jump back in when stuff like this happens.
I got back on recently because Call of Duty Warzone sucks. Like, I just, like,
maybe. You were all in on that game, man.
I was all in on that game, and now I just, like, you got aimbots, you got a bunch of stuff that, like, I get mentally exhausted playing Call of Duty.
Yeah, that's a high stress game.
When Brandon gets suspended from Rocket League, he has to go play Fortnite for a little while.
Yeah, I did get suspended from Rocket League. I called my teammates trash too many times. So. Listen, you call Pete. You can't type the word trash anymore. Like, I got that's too much. Oh, I got suspended.
BD5 playing a game with a 7-year-old.
Yeah, you mentally
trash kid.
He should have been better at the game. If he's playing on a diamond level, you know what? Come to play.
Mommy, Brandon Davis from Comic Book said I was trash.
Brandon Davis has his own like T-Pain vocalizer, and it's all changes his voice.
Oh no! I'm not actually talking. I am typing this stuff on my Xbox. If I get bad teammates,
you suck,
like,
man.
I typed out trash.
You're trash at this game.
But anyway, I'm back on Fortnite because it's way less stressful than anything else I play. I can play Fortnite with Hot Hands Viscardi. I can play Fortnite with my friends.
I'm all on that. I've been on that Fall Guys thing right now, but that's a whole other
thing. I play one game of Fortnite or one game of Call of Duty Warzone. I come in 42nd place, and there goes a half hour.
So angry.
Yeah, all right. So anyway, Marvel stuff is on Fortnite if you guys want to check it out. It looks like a bit of fun. I might be tempted to download it. I need something. My son watches me play a lot.
Download Rocket League. I need a teammate. Don't be trash.
He can't handle a
thing. I'm going to go as Peely for Halloween.
But anyway, check out Fortnite. We're going to take a break, pay some bills. But when we come back, we're going to deep dive into some comic stuff. Then we're going to get a review about Tenet from BD. And these guys are going to talk about The Boys while I chill. Because technically, it is my day off. So stay tuned for all of that.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
All right, we're back. Matthew, we're going to talk comics this week. Why don't you talk to us about what's come out this week, and we'll end on the one that we're going to kind of jump into. Three Jokers.
All right, so of course, yes, Three Jokers. is the big name, but yeah, we will get to it in a bit. So other things though did come out from DC. Wonder Woman number 761. This is the third issue in the sort of, not relaunch, but a new creative team that has won rave reviews. If you took a break from Wonder Woman and you've been looking for an opportunity to kind of get invested in a story again, go three issues back. This has been excellent so far. It's been a minute since Wonder Woman's been really this good, so definitely check that out. Of course, Teen Titans Annual number 2 is actually the like end epilogue, really not even epilogue, it's like really a climax to the Teen Titans run. And I mean, we're going to get into, spoilers are fine here, right? Okay, so it ends with kind of the thing that's been building this entire time, which is that Damian Wayne finally is still dealing with his grief over Alfred and is like trying to straight up kill folks in this book. And he chopped off KG Beast's arm last issue. And here he's trying to kill Deathstroke. And he just goes full on fight against Batman, like renounces the Robin name and kind of goes off in his own direction, which has been kind of building for a long time in the Titans series. And it's just been this bubbling thing. That's really, it's like, it was really interesting, and I'm interested to see where they take Damian next. And this pretty much kills the Titans book as a whole, I think, for a bit. So, I mean, if you've been interested, they don't really bill it as the climax, but if you've been reading Titans, this is really needed. Like, you can't just not disregard this issue. Most annuals are tie-ins and fill, but this is actually something you should check out. Over on the Marvel side, we have X-Factor number 2. Which we were a little split on. One, did you get a chance to read this, Kofi?
X-Factor number 2?
Yeah.
No, I mean, I barely got through number 1, so I was...
Yeah, it's a little divisive, I feel like. I will be interested to hear what you think about 2 at some point.
Yeah, you know how I feel about North Star. Has that changed?
No.
Okay, well, I'll take a look.
We also have Star Wars Dr. Aphra number 3. We then have a few books. Mega Man got his own series thanks to Boom Studios in Fully Charged number 1. And then we have a few smaller titles. Lock and Key. I know Charlie's a big Lock and Key fan. Lock and Key Impale Battalions Go number 1 is out. We also have Grit number 2, that weird like Witcher / Slaughterhouse book that actually is... It gets way funnier in this issue. Like, they don't do as much of the blood and guts. It's still there, but it's a lot funnier. Like, this issue actually has, like, hints of, like, almost like Calvin and Hobbes-style humor mixed with all this crazy supernatural stuff. It's kind of cool. And then we have No Heroine number 2, which was the first issue made the rounds kind of as one of those books to watch this year. So definitely check that out if you're looking for something new. So that is the rest of the books, but the biggest one to come out, of course, is Three Jokers, which is from DC Black Label, the long delayed Geoff Johns, Jason Fabok series that was supposed to kind of deal with all these things teased in Rebirth so long ago. And now it feels
Rebirth now. 3 years?
It's 2016.
Yeah. 4 years.
2016. Yeah. And then this was teased, and then wasn't this teased shortly after Watchmen? And then that book took...
I mean, it's been so many delays that I don't remember.
Yeah, so anyway, and this post, like, 5G is not happening, so now we're it's so weird. This sticks out like sore thumb. But what did you guys think about this book, just as a book in itself without some of the major ripple things?
It's a compelling story to me, but I don't know if I feel like there's a direction to it.
Yeah.
Like, it's basically just a compendium of DC kind of canon and history. And I don't think – the thing I thought about at the end as the major hiccup to this book is I don't feel like the actual three Jokers are distinct or are distinct in kind of – as characters to even justify this being a story necessarily. There's two of them. I could tell the one who is like, the one with the comedian one from Alan Moore's origin story, but the other two, and I know one's like related to Jason Todd's story and that one from Death in the Family.
They're each connected to the Bat Family.
Yeah.
In their own way.
But like the original one, because, and then like some of that stuff with the Moxon family and Joe Chill and all that, like that's so like far back and like mixed in with so much other stuff. that it's just like, it's almost like an exposition, like it's a visual exposition kind of thing. Like, it's like looking at a bunch of comic creators get together and be like, oh, we have this continuity snag. Like, what do we do about it? And somebody drew pictures of them talking about it. And like,
well, and that's what's crazy is that that's what Geoff Johns does really well, is that in a lot of his previous runs, that was his thing. He would come in, it was Green Lantern, it was Flash, it was all these characters that their continuity and their characters were a mess. And he would take all these little bits of lore and pieces of their origin that made sense and other pieces that didn't, and he would play with those and then turn those. And by the end of it, you had a kind of streamlined core version of the character. And he did that with the Titans when he hopped on them way back when.
So did a great job
JSA,
with those.
He did a great job with those, but
because
here
he was so
it's
subtle.
Like, but I don't have a problem with the, it wasn't actually, if you go back and read some of Green Lantern stuff, it wasn't.
Yeah, Green Lantern,
the Flash. All the stuff with Wally and the Flash, I thought was so well done. And so
Flash Rebirth? Oh my God.
No, that very nice.
No, pre-rebirth.
Okay.
Like
no, I mean Flash Rebirth.
Oh,
not Rebirth as an event. Flash Rebirth, bringing back Barry Allen and all that. Geoff Johns really, to me, hasn't been subtle since his Titan days. But again, I don't mind that. I loved his Green Lantern stuff. I'm just saying it's not necessarily like all nuanced. He hit a couple of key concepts.
No, it's like, here's some emotional things. It's Roy G. Biv. Like, it's not, it's not subtle.
I think that can work.
It's just less dumb than old school storytelling.
You've got a character like Barry and Wally and the Flash, where it's like, it is a fun thing. The Joker and Batman are not like this jovial, goofy thing. And I think when he's trying to play it the right way and play it serious. And I think it comes across as like, I have themes and things to say. Listen to them. Here they are.
But that's
and it's
Johns.
Just like, oh,
but
that, I know
whether
saying,
that's
it
good
does not
or
fit,
not.
It does not fit with these characters or this tone at all.
I think I didn't. Okay. So coming at it from me, I didn't feel like this was the same tone he had with the other characters he would play. I mean, Green Lantern was all about dealing with regret, death, grief, and fear. Flash was all about my role in the universe and my family, and I'm always giving myself to be the hero. Like, it was all these deep, kind of deeper themes with all the superhero trappings on top. This is very much pain and loss and where you fit in family. It's that same type of theme. So I don't necessarily have a problem with that. What I have a problem with really is it's not maybe even necessarily his fault. This is a solution in search of a problem. It made sense back when Rebirth started that you kind of wanted to bring these different concepts and versions of the Joker and these key characters into one or to this understandable whole. Since then, and since editorial changes and since direction changes, this isn't needed. DC is leaning into its multiverse more and more these days. DC is not really, it doesn't need this. You can kind of have that vagueness out there about which Joker is what. It doesn't need that defining. So now all of a sudden we have this like dissertation on these three different versions of the Joker, and it's out of place because this book was announced forever ago and it doesn't fit
and
the landscape.
And you're kind of tying into what Kofi said, I think, too. Like, the Jokers are not different. They were from different points of Batman's history, but they didn't like,
and it's just
bring
become,
in like Cesar Romero as one of the Jokers and like have this guy who's not violent and is just goofy as hell. Like that
would have been a very
different.
Because like if the Joker's become so much more complicated too as a character and grown so much again since then that like there's shades of there's so much stuff in here that these aren't even clear-cut comic eras. It's like the one in the middle, the Jason Todd one, is obviously influenced by Ledger's Joker. I mean, he kind of does that laugh with the he-ho-ho-ha, and he just keeps saying all the kind of anarchist stuff. Then there's like the old Super Friends Joker, who was like the master criminal, the plotter, that guy, and he's also mixed with a bunch of classic Joker stuff. And then you have the Alan Moore one when he turned 80, super violent and kind of dark and crazy like that. But like, there's also other things in him too, and so the kind of two crazy Jokers are still comedic. The plotted one's not. Like, it's just kind of like you said. I think it's ironic that the best parts of this story are everything that happens when there's not Jokers on the screen or on the panels.
Agreed.
The investigation
Todd,
is actually good.
Batgirl and Batman.
That's what is,
back and forth.
I think the most frustrating part to me. Like, I already think the Joker's an overdone character, but that's a personal issue.
I agree.
And the when you get to the end, and spoilers if you haven't
read it. Spoilers like, coming
the,
for this.
The book ends with Jason Todd killing one of the Jokers, which when you think about Batman lore is a huge deal, even though it doesn't really mean anything because it's a one Joker out of what could be more than three. But the idea of what it's going to do to Jason, you know, mentally, what it's going to do to his relationship with Batman, what it's going to do to Batman. And I think the ideas and the themes and like what you could do with that one action going forward are really like, it's a really cool thing to explore. It's got a lot of options. I'm after reading this, I'm not confident that it's going to be all that interesting in how it explores it. But I think the potential just from that one idea was there to have something really good. And I'm frustrated that it doesn't seem like that's what we're going to get.
That line at the end is my favorite line, where Todd's looking at him. He's like, "Boy, I hope that was the right one."
And it's like he's making it's a joke when it's like Jason Todd should be experiencing like this deep like what he wants to be cathartic, and he doesn't feel that doesn't feel that. He feels empty after he did the thing he said he was always going to do because he realizes he just like there's so much to explore and we're not getting that. That's not the book
we will. But I think we will get that as we move on. I love the whole back and forth with Barbara. And
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like each scene that wasn't about the Joker, that was about Batman and the investigation or the decisions they have to make are all really good. I love the aquarium scene and how creepy it is when they find the tank full of like clown fish and the Gaggy comes back and this whole thing. And pulling that thing out and like pulling stuff out like that. Like that's fun. Like that was all fun. Yeah. And the Barbara and the Jason and how much history there is there and kind of unpacking that stuff. And two characters you don't expect to necessarily see talking and be like the kind of spotlight together. Like, all that stuff is great. It's just the Joker stuff, like you said, it just feels like unnecessary and old. So
yeah, I don't know. And it's a bummer.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on it though, because we're gonna probably be debating this issue by issue. But that's three Jokers out now from DC.
How many issues are there gonna be in this?
There's only, I believe, three.
Three. I need to double check that. Yeah, I need to double check too. But good. I feel like it's all part of.
I was worried you're gonna be like 12.
No, but I wouldn't be. Okay, but knowing John's rep lately,
I would not doubt
that this was like a 6-month ordeal just to get three issues, but you know, let's hope not.
All right, since BD was kind of on the sidelines for that one, let's throw to him now, and he's going to be telling us about Tenet. He actually got to go to an IMAX theater, like one of two people or something crazy like that, who got to go see Tenet and IMAX in good relative safety. So, BD, take it away. He's going to give us a spoiler-free. This will be spoiler-free. Woo-hoo. Because we don't know how, man, like, when some of us are ever going to get to see Tenet. So,
going back,
spoiler-free review. And or maybe he already gave you the spoilers, and we've already just come, like Matt said, back to the beginning where he just didn't spoil anything. We'll let him tell you which way he's going. BD, take it away. How's Tenet, man? Was it worth going back in the theater?
I mean, that's for – I'm not going to make that decision.
No, not for everybody else. For you. We're just talking for you. Let's be clear.
I don't know if this is biased because this is my first movie I've seen, like new good movie that I was excited for in half of a year. This might be my new favorite movie. I am obsessed with Tenet.
Ever?
I mean, Inception one of my favorite movies ever. If that gives you any perspective, like – if anybody asked what's your favorite movie, I'd be like Inception, The Dark Knight, The Avengers, Austin Powers 2. But those were always in my kind of like favorite movies ever.
That one sticks out so much.
Man, a Pineapple Express. But Tenet,
didn't
man.
Didn't say Tropic Thunder, I'm ashamed.
Honestly, I cannot wait to see it again. I'm very happy. Like, I feel very lucky that I got to see it in an IMAX theater. There was four people in 450 seats. I mean, there was nobody within 50 feet of me. So it's easy for me to go to the movies and see it. And I know other people aren't going to be totally comfortable because if you look at the seat maps where your tickets are on sale, there might be 100 people in your theater. And I get it. Like, you know, that's not an ideal situation right now, especially in certain parts of the country and the world. But if you do go see this movie, if you are on the fence or you do decide you feel comfortable going to a theater, you won't be mad that you watched this movie. I would say I can only talk about it spoiler-free, but like even to try to spoil it, I would like, it would take so much time to try to spoil this movie to explain what happened to you in a simplified version that you would have time to tell me to shut up 100 times over and close out the podcast. It is very complex. And okay, so my biggest complaint will probably be the second act is very exposition heavy. It gets a little bit long, but that you come to expect that in any Nolan movie. And there's actually one point where Pattinson says, don't try to understand it. Just do it to John David Washington's character. I think that's who says it and who he says it to. But I wrote down at that point in the film, I was like, you know what? That might be in my notes for this review, which isn't a good thing. But then when it all comes together and they don't hit you over the head with the explanation. So I think a lot of people are going to have questions about it and they're going to have their own interpretations of it. But when it all comes together, the payoff lands so tremendously. Like, it is such a smart, smart movie. And then you go back to the few things that you really do remember from the beginning. Like, even the opening shot, it's so genius because in the opening scenes, there's a scene, and this is in the trailer, but there's a sequence where they're being interrogated, where John David Washington and one of his, like, some guy who ends up not being very important, are being interrogated on train tracks. And on one side of the screen, you got a train going this way. On the other side of the screen, you got a train going this way. And that is just so symbolic of the entire film in a way that I can't even explain to you. And you're not even going to understand if I try until you see the movie. And it's just Nolan being an absolute genius. The cinematics of the film, it's a spectacle. Everything is practical and it makes it like it enhances the film. I don't know if like movie people who aren't movie buffs will even care about that, because I'm sure CGI could probably accomplish very similar things at this point in filmmaking technology. But when you know that and you watch this, it really blows you away even more. Like John David Washington, put this guy in everything. Put him, he's so good. If he's not John Stewart after this, I don't know what
yeah, word he's about. And I love that people are finally getting on the John David Washington train. Cause I remember like when we would talk about Ballers, like at the beginning, when Ballers first started,
it was like, oh my God,
he's like this guy.
Oh my God!
You're like blowing Brandon's mind right now.
From day one,
dude. I forgot he was my favorite character on Ballers.
Like he was what drew me. Like when I watched the first episode of that show, I liked The Rock, but I was like, I like this guy. And then I read about him, I was like, oh, that's Denzel's kid. Like that's why I like this guy.
I didn't even make that connection. I'm an idiot. Wow, he's fantastic. But also, man, I mean Pattinson, he kills it. That is absolutely my Batman. Elizabeth Debicki is fantastic. She's really good.
She's great in everything. Score. She's just been crushing Hollywood.
She was really good. Just a side note, on demand right now, there's a movie called The Burnt Orange Heresy. Very weird movie, but she's fantastic in it.
The score for the movie, it's not Hans Zimmer this time. It's
Ludwig. Say, it's Ludwig, isn't it?
It's Ludwig Göransson.
It's Ludwig, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, it's got...
Mandalorian, Black Panther.
Yeah, but it's got, like, the score, it's hard not to pick up, like, the echoes of Inception, like because it's a very pulse-pounding, like, heavy, like, bomb, bomb, like, that kind of stuff that you get in Nolan movies. But, there's even scenes where, like, characters are just planning stuff, and it's really an expositional sequence, but the camera's doing a 360, and the music is pulse-pounding, and it just keeps you going. Like, at one point, I felt myself in my seat going like this, like, rocking back and forth because I was so excited. And then when everything pays off, I'm going to gush over this movie. I mean, it's 5.5 stars for me.
It's the second time the word gush is appeared in this podcast. What is happening?
Dude, I love Tenet.
No, this week.
Oh, okay. Like, what?
And the thing about it, I want to say this to end this because I'm just kind of being so vague and I feel like I'm saying the same stuff over and over. It is an amazing experience to see this movie in IMAX, to see it on the biggest screen, to have a sound system that shakes the floor. It's amazing. But if you don't have the option to go to a theater or you don't feel comfortable going to a theater or all of the above, it is such a clever and complex experience that I truly believe when it does hit home release, however, whatever shape that takes, whether it's on demand or Blu-ray or download, whatever, you will still have a satisfying experience watching this movie on a television on your couch. I think it is enhanced, undoubtedly. I understand the argument. It is enhanced. It is meant to be watched on that IMAX screen. It takes up the whole giant screen, and the sound system it roars. But it's such a good story. It's so cleverly executed that people are still going to enjoy this when they inevitably watch it at home.
Yeah, because then you can hit rewind.
I can't wait to see
what
it
I did there.
I can't wait to get it when it comes home to play it backwards and see what happens.
I want to see, yeah. Oh, that'd be good too. And yeah, I want to see. I just want to get to the end and start it over, just like Memento. That's classic Nolan.
You guys keep saying
that. When that went off in the theater, and I was just like, please, I need to see that again, please.
I've been watching back through the Nolan stuff ahead of Tenet, and I still have Dark Knight's the one of the only ones I have left to watch, but I still think Memento. Is his best, most exciting.
I know we're going to get a lot of traffic on the site and a lot of views on videos from Tenet Explained. Like, people are going to have questions.
Fun fact. I invented the ending explained post for Inception 10 years ago. That's a fact.
TM.
Yeah. Charlie looks skeptical. You can look it up.
Honestly, there's
that was the first one.
No way.
There was think about it. What was their ending to explain before that?
Yeah, there was definitely no Iron Man.
I have a question.
Post-credit scene explained before that. There was no way.
So I invented that in a drunken haze at Comic-Con 10 years ago because the editor of the owner of the other site I worked for was like, people have a lot of questions in this Inception movie.
I mean, there certainly
we should get something together.
Charlie still looks skeptical. Like a
you can Google it, Charlie.
Explained.
Try to Google something earlier.
So I have a question.
Ending explained.
That's not related. Matt? That's not really related to that. So I have a question. Because I know it's hard to describe this movie because you can't go into spoilers and things like that. But just taking it from a macro perspective, if a movie leaves you, did it personally leave you with having being unclear about what happened in the movie, how things should go? Like, is it kind of like, will everybody leave it that way? And at that point, is that that's the movie's fault for not conveying that thought to the audience? Or is it just something that there's hidden layers of complexity? Like, I want to know, like, is this movie kind of full of itself and doesn't explain things enough? Or is it genuinely deep and genuinely complex that it kind of just needs multiple watches? Like,
I think I interpreted the whole thing in one watch. Think there was a moment where the third act begins. There's a moment when the third act begins and there's a conversation that happens kind of through a window, and that's all I'll say. So anybody who's listening to this, when they see the movie, they'll know what I'm talking about. That doesn't spoil anything though. There's a conversation that happens through a window, and I was watching it, and you see it from both sides of the window, and I was really confused. I was like, how does this even make sense? If this is happening, why is that happening? If that happened, why is this happening? And then it explains it again after that, and it explains it a third time after that, not by telling you, but by showing you. And I think there's going to be a lot of, like, it's going to be, there are questions where, like, I've had questions, like, even after the movie, you see in the trailer when they say, like, you have to drop the bullet to pick it up or whatever. And I'm kind of like, how does that work? But there are explanations for all of it, I think. The more you think about it, the more you will be able to explain it to yourself if you were really watching the movie.
Okay.
Maybe people are going to call me crazy. I defend Lost into its grave. So
second ending explained post I ever did.
I knew Lost was going to make its way into the conversation. But yeah, that was my question. I didn't know.
I found your story, Kofi. You're originally talking about. I can't date it because they refreshed it on August 6, 2020.
Oh, I know. You just
so
click,
I can't.
There's going to be more.
It came out the day Inception came out. That's when I posted it.
There will be more. I have plenty of like comparisons to Lost in this movie in my head already, and not because I'm a Lost fan, but because there is literally a quote in Tenet, which is a very important quote from Lost, and it's going to draw inevitable comparisons, like unquestionable comparisons, and it's either people
sounds
are going to
like
love
a post BD is writing.
I loved it. 5 stars for me. Art, one of my favorite films. I can't wait to see it again. Bottom line.
Awesome.
All right. That's Tenet. We will be back to kind of talk about that more when the trickle of us all possibly seeing it eventually. All right. I'm going to throw to you three guys. Spoiler free. Tell us now that the embargo is up. How is The Boys season 2? What's going on with this show? Is this about to kick off? Because this isn't going to be a fall TV season unlike any other before us. Yeah. Are we still going to be taken care of with The Boys season 2?
It's awesome.
Yeah,
it's so good.
It's awesome. It's awesome.
Wow, that was easy.
It's infuriatingly good.
Yeah,
that's Comic Book Nation. Thank you.
To give context, so a few weeks ago, we were talking about the Umbrella Academy, and I said I didn't make it through the first episode of the season. And I said there was something I can't talk about that I was watching right before I watched that season that kind of informed my opinion a bit. So I had watched the first, at that point, three episodes of the season. I've since watched the whole thing. But I watched the first three episodes of the season right before I watched Umbrella Academy. And seeing how they're two totally different shows, totally different tones. So I'm not comparing like apples to oranges here. I know they both do different things. But as far as like how a second season handles moving you with momentum from where the first season ended to this new arc and introducing new characters and plot devices, it was like night and day. So like I watched those first three, I was pumped. And then I went and watched Umbrella Academy. And that's why I feel like that's why I felt so stilted, is because I was like, oh my God, you hit the ground running in season two of The Boys. Like and not just from like an action set piece or anything like that, but it's from like emotional points. It's from character interactions. There's just, it keeps you moving. You're hooked on where your favorite group is at that point in time. You want to see where Billy figures into it. You're interested to see like the fallout from the Seven stuff that happened at the end. Like it just keeps you moving. And then while it's doing that, it does all the craziness that you like come to expect of, like, there's a ton of blood and guts in the season.
It is darker. Yes. It is crazier. It is weirder than season one by leaps and bounds.
And so delightfully weird.
I know. I hate how happy I am when I watch this. Oh my God, it drives me crazy.
I was watching this with Anissa in the room, and I kept going, and she would like, what are you doing? And I would like have my like mouth covered. I was just like, oh my God, like that's nuts. And not always just from like a gory thing, just from like, they just draw, sometimes in the middle of episodes.
In the show like this, yeah, that could have been literal.
In episodes, they just kind of drop like things that you think would happen at the very end of an episode to be the hook for the next episode. They'll drop something like that like midway through.
Come on, this
like,
isn't written by Robert Kirkman.
What?
Come on, this isn't written by Robert Kirkman.
But oh, like, just like big character things of like, oh wow, they just dropped that 20 minutes into the episode, and it keeps you moving through. But yeah, and you've seen some of it in the trailers. Like we've seen the parts of the whale scene, though. What makes me happy is that like that scene continues. There's like a whole second
half.
Yeah,
there's much more to it.
Yeah, to that. So even though you've seen pieces, you haven't really seen.
Oh,
the
we've
whole
seen
thing.
Pieces.
Yeah, exactly.
You ain't seen nothing yet.
I mean, but like this scene, I don't want to spoil anything. I just want you guys to react to this. Like, there's two things that really stuck with me that in like a uncomfortable way, but like in a way the show delivered it, like it's like, oh my God, I can't believe they did that, but it makes sense they did that. One is I'll just say Homelander's special friend. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes,
that's the thing that has,
and then but the other one
it's ingrained
is when,
in
is
my brain
like during a certain escape sequence when something gets like tangled up. Oh my God, that show holds nothing.
I have not gotten to that yet, but I have been told about that by somebody else, and I think I know what you're talking about.
This show holds nothing back. It is like, if you think that like, whatever, if like you, I know people say like, woke culture kills
Kofi comics. Knows what you're talking about, by the way. He totally not see his face.
I don't. I'm just like getting myself prepared for this.
How many times in comment sections you used to, or on Twitter, like the internet hate tank, do we see people who are like, oh, PC culture's killing comedy, or whatever they want to say? This show...
Not for Eric Kripke.
Nothing off limits, and it all works, and it's tremendously successful. Nothing is killing comedy. Like, it proves if you do it right, and it fits your tone of your show, it's gonna fly.
It's what just writing smart. Like, it's the that's the difference.
But it's also not,
like none of it is just for the sake of being there. It all fits this tone and this world and this story. And of course, some of it is funny because it's so shocking. But that is the true to the tone of the show.
One of the For fans of the comics, I'm interested to see when this is all, like, everyone's seen it, things like that. There is one big thing that they do not do that I feel like will shock people. And then there's another thing that I feel like people have been waiting for,
and like they deliver on that. I will be interested to see how like fans of the comics react to those, but they're doing, we talked about it last episode about like how they're seeding things for season three, and like they're planting them really early and subtly, and then they expound on them in a huge way. They can run with it, right? So like all the stuff we were talking about, the castings for season three, and like Lamplighter's whole part in this is really interesting, and they find ways to give even the smaller characters an arc, and it's really impressive how they can even take a character who's really only in, you know, a couple episodes and give them like a fully realized arc. What I will say is I think when we talked to Anthony Starr about like Homelander's whole being a father thing, that's as like dysfunctional as you would expect it to be. But I remember at the time him saying like, essentially like, you know, you might even leave with a little bit of empathy for the character. I don't know if I felt things. I felt things of like, so I mean, maybe you could say they were empathy, but like, I will be interested to see how people react to that. Cause that whole Rebecca, Billy, you know, Ryan and Homelander dynamic and Stormfront dynamic at some point, who, by the way, is like my favorite.
Oh, it's one of the best characters.
She is amazing in this show, both as a, like, from a story perspective and then just from a character perspective. She's, every time she's on screen, and especially her and Homelander on screen together, every time it's amazing. You've seen some of it in the trailers, but like, it's
great. Ayakash has been, I don't know if any of y'all watched You're the Worst on FX, but Ayakash,
great show,
was so good on that show. Yeah. And she just continues just that excellence right into this. And I really appreciate how you put that, Matt, about like dropping seeds and really building to a larger story, but without being obvious about it. You know, we were talking about subtlety earlier, and like,
yeah,
I think that what we don't realize, like what we don't acknowledge, I guess, about Eric Kripke, you know, he's best known for doing Supernatural. He created Supernatural, which is very much a monster of the week. Every episode's kind of its own thing. And then there's some big stories, but those early seasons of Supernatural, when they had all the stuff with their dad, that was some of the best, like planting a seed and just being patient and not revisiting it for 10 episodes. But then as soon as it comes around, it stuck with you so much that you know exactly what's happening.
Yeah.
And I think that was really a skill we don't give Eric Kripke enough credit for from Supernatural. And he really just expounds on it with The Boys. It's very, very apparent. It's really, really excellent way of storytelling. And I've been blown away by it. I haven't finished the season like you guys have. But of what I've seen, I'm six episodes in now, and I'm very, very impressed with just how this show continues to be as good as it is. I mean, we're 18 episodes, 20 episodes, whatever, in now, and it's still fantastic.
It's excellent. Yeah. And I don't know about Brandon, but like I binged it. Like I binged the whole thing. So, and yeah,
I had like a deadline to meet. So I watched the whole thing. And I mean, like I loved it. Like I just like, and I love the commentary, like the snarky commentary it makes about some of the things we see like on the news today, like and in our Twitter feeds today. It is just so smart. Like I think it's a great show. I think people are going to love it. And I'm actually, like, as much as I'm happy I saw it ahead of time, I'm very excited that it's going to drop, like, week by week, because we'll be able to have these conversations with people. And you all know I love talking to everybody, to our readers and to our viewers. Like, it's my favorite part of all this. So the fact that on a weekly basis we'll be able to talk about this, like, I think that's awesome. And it's only going to help the show grow.
Yeah.
All right. Anybody else? Is that it? So, in other words, check out The Boys, because you got nothing better to do for fall TV season right now. So, Amazon Prime Video next weekend. First three episodes, and then it goes weekly. So, we'll be discussing weekly here, because it sounds like we're going to have a lot to talk about. So, strap in for that.
Strap on. I'm trying to remember where three ends up, because that's where I'm like what we're all going to talk about that first week.
Well, I don't know, but it feels like we're going to be seeing something. But all right, that'll do it for this episode of Comic Nation. We want to thank you guys for tuning in, as always, especially during this quarantine arc, while we're just trying to keep our sanity with some good content. If you're just now getting into the show, we just put up new episodes every Wednesday and every Friday on comicbook.com, where you can subscribe and listen there. Or you can subscribe on your favorite podcast platforms. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and Google Playlist. You can also tell an Amazon Alexa device to fire up Comic Book Nation podcast, and it will start playing for you. If you want to talk to any of us, you can always find us at the hashtag Comic Book Nation, or you can find me at Kofi Outlaw.
You can find me at Matt Aguilar CB.
You can find me at Brandon Davis BD.
And I'm at Charlie Ridgely.
And if you are liking the show, we have a closet full of awesomeness. You know, if you can see me right now, this Comic Book Nation merch. So we need to get rid of it and keep that budget up. So when we get back in the studio, we need to get rid of a lot of t-shirts. And we give them away to people who leave us 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. We will read your review on the show and probably just start sending them out anyway, because we need to get rid of some shirts. And we don't have all the time in the world. But that's it. That'll do it for Comic Book Nation. We hope you guys are enjoying and staying healthy, staying checked in, and finding some great content to enjoy out here. We'll be here for you next time and see you again. Peace.
Deuces.